You know that old saying, when the U.S. economy sneezes, the world catches a cold.
Yeah, a classic.
Well, it feels like we got the 2026 version of that this week.
Oh, absolutely. Except this time it was, well, when YouTube sneezes.
The entire internet just grinds to a halt. It goes into full-blown respiratory failure.
It really felt that way. For a couple of hours, the digital heartbeat of the world just, skipped. People were genuinely panicked.
Complete and utter chaos. So, welcome back to the Deep Dive. It's the week of February 19th, 2026. And if you can hear this, that's good news. It means your internet works and the servers are still online.
For now, anyway.
Yeah.
And it has been a week just defined by fragility, hasn't it?
Fragility is the perfect word.
The fragility of platforms, of trust in games, and sadly, the fragility of life itself.
Yeah, and we have a huge step to get through today. We're going to unpack that massive YouTube outage, what it actually means for the creator economy.
And we've got a leak that suggests zombies are coming back to the sunlight in a Resident Evil 5 remake.
Oh, yes. And why that is such a nightmare to get right. We've also got a launch window for Marvel Tokkan,
The
finally.
fighting game community can breathe again, breaking them out of hype limbo.
And we're going to get into this really fascinating case of mass hysteria around a shooter called Highguard.
And of course, we'll pay our respects to Shutaro Ida, a true titan.
A legend of the Metroidvania genre. But let's start with the big one. The event that had everyone staring at a spinning circle, the day the screens went black.
February 17th, the Great Tuesday Outage.
Take me back to it, because I was sitting there refreshing my page, checking my router, doing the whole ritual, assuming it was my Wi-Fi acting up.
Of course,
Ew.
everyone did. And that's really the first takeaway here. It was around 10:30 Eastern, and reports just started going vertical. This wasn't local.
Yeah.
It was a global, widespread failure. Desktop, mobile, everything. The sources described it perfectly. Features were acting like they were, quote, wading through wet cement.
That is such a good image. You click a video and you just get the spinning wheel of death. Comments wouldn't load. The sidebar was just gone.
Right. And what I found so interesting was the immediate social reaction. Within minutes, X and Bluesky just became this global diagnostics board.
It's the modern ritual, isn't it? You don't check the news, you check Down Detector.
And the spike on Down Detector looked like a sheer cliff face. It was a wall. But here's the so what of it all. The whole thing lasted about 2 hours.
Just 2 hours.
Yeah, it was resolved around midnight Eastern. And to an outsider, that sounds like nothing. A minor inconvenience. Go read a book.
But in 2026, that is an eternity in digital years. It's not that simple.
Not at all. And this is where we need to kind of reframe what YouTube even is. It's not just a video website, it's critical infrastructure.
Absolutely. For millions of people, it's their entire business, it's their storefront.
It's their storefront, their broadcast network, their portfolio, and most importantly, their paycheck pipeline.
Think about the ad revenue alone. 10 to midnight Eastern, that's prime time in the US.
Exactly. We were talking about millions upon millions of dollars in lost ad impressions that just poof, they're gone.
And you don't get that back.
You don't. If you're a creator trying to pay rent with that money, it just vanished. And for viewers, it's their education, it's how-to guides, it's their background noise. When that disappears without warning, it feels like the power went out.
And the silence from Google, that was the part that really spooked me. It was deafening.
That was the most alarming part. No official statement, no root cause, nothing. When the power goes out, the utility company at least tells you a transformer blew. Here, we just sat in the dark.
It just shows you how much we've put all our eggs in one massive, massive basket. When the monolith stumbles, you realize there's no backup plan.
And it makes you wonder, if that had lasted for 24 hours, what happens to the entire industry built on top of it? It's a massive single point of failure.
Well, speaking of stumbles and second chances, let's pivot to something that has the gaming world just buzzing. The ESRB website had a little slip-up.
Ah, yes. The leak that refuses to die. The Resident Evil 5 remake.
Capcom is like clockwork with these RE2, RE3, the massive success of the RE4 remake. So, RE5 feels inevitable.
It does.
But you've made the point that this is a much trickier adaptation. Why is RE5 the problem child of the series?
It really is. It has this identity crisis.
Yeah.
To get why it's so hard, you have to go back to 2009. The original RE5 was the moment the series definitively broke up with survival horror
Right.
and decided to marry action horror.
Less creeping down dark hallways counting bullets, more standing on a Humvee with a machine gun.
Exactly. And the biggest challenge, surprisingly, is the setting. Horror usually relies on darkness, shadows, fog. It hides the monster.
Yeah, claustrophobia.
Right. RE5 takes place in broad, harsh African daylight.
Zombies in the sunlight. It sounds like it shouldn't work. It's hard to be scared when you can see for a mile in every direction.
It's incredibly difficult. In the original, they just used sheer numbers of enemies to create stress, but it often just felt like an action movie. So the remake's challenge is, how do you use the RE engine, which is famous for its dark, gritty look, to make bright sunlight feel scary?
So what's the opportunity for Capcom? Why even touch a game that was so divisive?
Because a remake is a chance to, well, to fix history. The sources say they want to inject more grit into it. Think of a movie like Midsommar.
Oh, good example.
That movie proved you can do horror in broad daylight if you make the atmosphere oppressive and hot and just disorienting.
So you make the environment itself feel hostile.
Exactly. And we have to talk about the elephant in the room. Or the partner in the room, Shiva Elamar.
Oh my God, the AI. The trauma is coming back to me. If you played that game single player, you know the pain. She'd waste all your ammo, get stuck on things.
She'd heal you when you had a paper cut. It was a notorious pain point. Companion AI just wasn't there yet in 2009.
Not even close.
So this is their chance to overhaul that.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, RE5 was defined by co-op. It was one of the best couch co-op games of that generation.
I must have put hundreds of hours into that with my college roommate, just shouting at each other to share ammo. It was a bonding experience.
It was. And that's the gold mine. If they can modernize that with seamless drop-in, drop-out networking and make the AI partner actually competent when you're solo, they can redeem the game's entire reputation.
So they have to find a way to balance the action, but bring back the actual scares.
They have to. Imagine the heat making it hard to aim, the enemies are faster, and the sunlight feels exposing, not comforting. That's the potential here.
All right, from fighting zombies in the sun to, well, just fighting in general. Let's talk PlayStation State of Play. We finally got a window for Marvel Tokon Fighting Souls.
Finally, 2026, the end of hype limbo.
I love that term, hype limbo. It feels like we've been there for a solid year.
It's a real place for fighting game fans. You get a cool trailer, maybe a closed beta for a few lucky people, and then radio silence for months.
The community has been just, like, breaking down year-old footage frame by frame.
Trying to guess mechanics from blurry screenshots. Is that a new assist move? Is that Wolverine Shadow?
It's like trying to decipher ancient ruins.
It is. So getting a confirmed 2026 window is a massive relief. But the reason this is so interesting isn't just Marvel. It's the developer. Arc System Works.
The wizards behind Guilty Gear and Dragon Ball FighterZ.
Exactly. And their pedigree is very specific. They are known for games that look like playable anime and systems that prioritize crystal clear visual readability.
So why is this a challenge? Marvel plus Arxis sounds like a total slam dunk.
It's the identity problem again, just
yeah.
A different flavor. Think about superhero games.
Right.
They rely on massive spectacle, right? Chaos, explosions
yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah, if I do a super move, I want the screen to shake. I want it to look like a comic book panel is exploding.
But that's the opposite of the Arxis philosophy. They prioritize legibility. In a competitive fighter, you need to know exactly who got hit, how they got hit, and where they're going. If the screen is filled with smoke and debris, you can't play at a high level.
So the trick is making a game that feels like a chaotic superhero brawl for a casual fan.
Right.
But plays like a tight, readable, competitive fighter for the pros.
That is the needle they have to thread. And it's so hard, you're going to get millions of casual players who just want to mash buttons as Wolverine. You have to welcome them without flattening the ceiling for the pros who want depth.
It's a tough balance. Make it too simple, the pros are gone in a month. Too complex, and the Marvel fans bounce right off it.
Precisely. But if anyone can do it, it's them. Dragon Ball FighterZ was kind of the blueprint. It had auto combos for newcomers, but deep team synergy for pros. This will probably double down on that.
Speaking of communities and their anxieties, let's talk Ohaigard. We just talked about YouTube going down, but what happens when a single game's website goes down?
Apparently, absolute panic. This story is a perfect case study in the psychology of live service gamers.
So set the stage. Ohaigard is a PvP raid shooter. It's already struggling a bit. Low player counts, mixed reviews, and then boom, the website just goes dark. 404 error.
And immediately, the narrative takes hold. Players didn't think, oh, an IT hiccup. They thought, this is it. They're pulling the plug. The game is dead.
The dead game posts must have been instant on Reddit and Discord.
Oh, within seconds. It turned out a developer had to jump in and clarify they were just simplifying the site, and the game isn't shutting down just yet.
Oof. That just, yeah, is doing a lot of heavy lifting in that sentence.
It is. But let's unpack why they panicked. In the live service world, players are trained to read the tea leaves.
What do you mean by tea leaves?
It's pattern recognition of a dying game. The devs go quiet, updates get delayed, you hear rumors of staff leaving. So when you combine rumors about the studio, Wildlight, with the sudden website outage, it looks like the first domino falling.
It's like a run on a bank. The panic itself can cause the failure.
That brings us to the death spiral. This is so crucial to this genre. Highguard needs players to function. It needs matchmaking.
Right. If I log in and can't find a match in 2 minutes, I'm out.
Exactly. So concurrency drops and queue times get longer. Then the casual players leave. That leaves only the hardcore top 1% of players.
And now if I do wait 10 minutes for a match, I get absolutely destroyed by a pro and I quit forever.
And the skill gap widens, the pool shrinks, and the game just starts to cannibalize itself. That's the death spiral. So when that website went down, players worried the spiral had finally hit the bottom.
It really shows how fragile that trust is between a developer and a player base now. You're one 404 error away from a complete PR crisis.
It's the burden of the model. You're not just selling a game, you're maintaining a relationship. And if you stop communicating, people assume the worst.
From the anxieties of the present, I want to take a moment to look back. We got some pretty somber news this week with the passing of Shitaro Aida.
Yes. This was a heavy blow. He passed away on February 10th at 52, after a long battle with pancreatic cancer.
He was such a huge figure, especially for anyone who loves Castlevania or the Metroidvania genre as a whole.
A creative lead on Bloodstained, and his work on the Castlevania series really helped define a very specific, very special feeling in gaming.
The sources called it the Castlevania click. I love that. Can you explain what that means?
It's so hard to design for. It's that perfect moment where the exploration, the combat rhythm, and the whole atmosphere just lock together. You're not just running through a map. You're mastering a space.
It's that feeling when you get a new ability, like the double jump, and you suddenly realize, wait a minute, I can get to that ledge I saw an hour ago.
That's it, exactly.
Yeah.
And you backtrack not because you have to, but because you're genuinely curious. Aida was a master of creating that flow state. He knew these games were about curiosity and reward.
It gives you this sense of ownership over the world. You learn the castle like it's your own neighborhood.
That was his genius. 52 is just far too young, but his design philosophy is, well, it's immortal. It's baked into the genre now.
It's a huge loss. But you're right. His DNA is in the code of so many games we play today.
Absolutely.
So looking back at everything we've talked about today, outages, zombies, fighting games.
There's a real thematic thread running through it all, isn't there?
Go on.
Well, think about it. We started with YouTube, a tool we all rely on, just breaking down and showing us how fragile our livelihoods can be.
Right.
Then we talked about Highguard, where a simple tech glitch caused an existential crisis because the trust was already gone.
Right.
Then you look at Resident Evil and Marvel franchises constantly trying to reinvent themselves to find stable footing.
It feels like everything is constantly in flux. The tech, the business models, everything.
That's the nature of digital culture. It's incredibly powerful, but it's also ephemeral. The tools we use can vanish for 2 hours. The games we invest in can disappear if a server bill doesn't get paid.
And yet, in the middle of all that fragility, you have the human element, the creativity of someone like Shitaro Aida, or the teams trying to solve these impossible design problems.
That's the balance.
Yeah.
The systems are fragile, but the creativity driving them is resilient. That's what keeps it all going.
Which brings us to the big question for you, the listener. We've talked about outages and trust and the death spiral.
It raises a provocative thought.
In an era where we rely so completely on live services, whether it's YouTube for our income or a game for our entertainment, how much downtime does it actually take to break your trust permanently?
Is it 2 hours? Is it a day? Or is that trust already so thin that we're just waiting for the next error message to confirm what we already suspect?
Something to think about the next time your feed won't load. Thanks for diving in with us.
Stay curious.
We'll catch you in the next one.